With me now then, John Bancroft. John, you've got things dealing with the website, and the website is fieldingandplathistory.org.uk. We'll get that in early so everybody knows exactly where to look. You've been creating the company timeline. Somebody, tell me about this.
Yes, that's correct. This actually goes back about a couple of years now. Julie asked me, I think she'd been made aware that I was doing a chronology of my own, and so it seemed a good idea to transpose some of that in an abbreviated form and put a company timeline together. So I started to do this by moving stuff across from my own information onto a spreadsheet, which I'm going to show to you, Pete. This is a typical spreadsheet, and the important thing here is that it's been broken down by decade, so that you don't have one single long page to look through the whole of the history. It's done every 10 years.
What I like about this is you've got the date, you've got what happened, you've got why was this significant stroke interesting, which is a really wonderful column because it's easy to look at, and what's the source of the information. So that's how you broke it down.
That's correct. And I just mentioned why was this significant. I tried to abbreviate that into three particular categories, whether it was product news, such as a major order, whether it was company news, i.e. a company had been bought or sold or whatever, and people news, where people had either come or gone or left the company. So those are the three categories that the company timeline was created. So having produced the spreadsheets for effectively the whole of the company period, I then had to start to learn to use the website. And I was helped very much there by Ollie Taylor, who of course isn't working on this anymore, but he introduced me on how to operate the web and how to create new pages and charts and so forth. And it was hard going to begin with, but I think after 2 years I can safely say I've cracked it.
Just remind me of your history with Fielding and Platt then before we go any further.
Well, I started in 61, and so I had the best part of 40 years continuous service.
You couldn't have believed in 1961 or whatever it was, that you would be at the end of all of this going back looking through the history of this company, surely?
No, I couldn't, and it's been a revelation for me as well. It certainly keeps the brain cells ticking.
Just looking at one or two things on this timeline spreadsheet you've given to me here, as you said, people news, company news. There's the one here, 31st of January 2003. Gloucester office closed. MBMHS transferred to Leeds.
The World Bridge Material Handling Systems, that refers to.
Ending of 137 years of Fielding and Platt in Gloucester.
That's right.
That's the end.
That's it. Well,
is,
I mean, that.
And is that the end line for your timeline? Or is there anything that could have happened after that?
There are a couple of things. There's actually, I've recorded the passing away of Jim Fielding and also one of our other later directors, Leslie Spooner. And so that extends beyond the period of 2003, but I think it's important perhaps to put those significant parts because they were key people.
Yeah, the company might have closed then, but you know, but the people ran on, didn't they?
There is still something there. And if we see something that is relevant, that we feel is important, then it will go on there. There's no reason why it
should. One of the things that should go on there is 2015, Fielding and Platt Legacy Group.
Well,
because all this stuff's arrived from somewhere and you've done it.
You raise an interesting point there. Let me say it's a question of time. it hasn't been prioritised just at the moment.
And looking at another one here, back in 1993, 21st of January 1993, Fielding and Platt wins order for Syria for an extrusion plant, value $2.85 million. And in your significant interesting column, it says, product news, first multi-million pound order for many years.
Yes.
Did they think things were picking up again then?
Well, I mean, in the 1990s, we did have a number of significant value orders. I remember that one very well because I was very closely involved through the whole process.
What about photographs? Are you cataloguing and dealing with the photographs and all this as well?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we were going to come on to the question of the photographs a little bit further down. There are a dearth of photographs of that particular period.
And you're setting up, I think, as well, the machinery web page section
The web page,
is this pictures of machinery? Or
yeah.
Is this,
If I can just mention before that, Pete, the notable orders. Having completed the company timeline, it was very opportune to do the notable orders. Now, where there's a significance in this, Jeff has spoken very ably about his work in the early order books. I have been looking at order books from the 1931 period onwards. There are 10 books covering the whole of that period, from 31 up to 1990s. There's about 140, 150 pages in each book. I mean, it's a ledger, plus an index in there as well. Now, in order to be able to do notable orders, which again, is something that is worth looking at. I'm going to show you a picture of a typical page in one of the order books. And I use my camera to photograph every single page out of all these 10 books, so there's a lot of photographs. That then enabled me to condense into order pages, into a spreadsheet of the orders, again by decade. It seemed very sensible to split this all down by decade because there are so many. This spreadsheet represents a list of the higher value orders that came into the company through the period from 31 onwards. And so that is all there in the machinery section. Putting that on the web was a lot easier this time because being a bit more streetwise in how to use it, the charts that are there lend themselves, they're very similar, in fact, to the charts of the company timeline. And if you go on to the notable orders, which are fairly close to the top of the machinery section, you will see that there is a link between the company timeline for a decade and the notable orders for a decade. So you can flip between the two very easily. It lends itself to ease.
We'll come back and look at that very shortly. But let me tell you, if you have friends, family, any connections that were at Fielding & Platt, believe me, this website is quite unbelievable. fieldingandplatthistory.org.uk. We were talking about the order books and how you got those onto the website, John. Now, you were obviously the right person to do this, and you photographed everyone, as you said. Now, I know just how difficult that is, because I've been doing work on the Churchdown Mel Voice Choir history book of the past 50 years. And I've been doing very much the same with all the photographs. They're not digital, so we couldn't get them how we want them. And I've been doing this. It's not an easy thing, and it's very time-consuming.
It is time-consuming indeed, but it's something that had to be done. And realistically, it was the only way of being able to pull the orders together and extrapolate the key orders that would be worth showing to everybody. Because the notable order list by no means identifies every single order that the company has taken. It's the ones that are, A, mainly high value, and ones that may be interesting to the public at large to read.
And the great thing is, you can show me here, you show me the photograph you've taken of the page of the ledger, of the order book 18, and down the bottom, there's one here for Wensbury Tube, Oxford Street in Staffordshire, and then you show me where it is actually on the website and on the timeline, which is brilliant. And it just ties up so nicely, doesn't it?
It does. It's worked very well. I mean, I actually surprised myself how it seemed to come together.
And on the website, will you be able to go back and look at the original photograph? Is that on there as well?
Well, we need to move on to how the photographs have been put on as well. And then that probably links them all together.
So, yeah, and you've been dealing with the photographs as well?
For my sins, I have, yes. The spreadsheets that I produce are really a means of condensing the information that then enabled me to type it in and create a web page of notable orders. So that's how they have been created. And we then moved on to the photographs, where that was, again, it starts back about 2 years ago, believe it or not, where we started to digitally scan the photographs. Now, before going through what I've done, I do have to say that a lot of work was done by Jeff and some of his colleagues at the time, where we had photographs that had been taken by the photographic department that were copies, and they were boxed into lever arch folders. And there were many of them. I don't know off the top of my head just how many, but there were a lot of photographs. And there was a need to, first of all, identify what we'd got and what was missing. And there were a bucketful of loose photographs that were all over the place that were put into order. And that had to be pulled together. Now, Jeff and his colleagues did a lot of that work in the initial stages. And in the meantime, I started to prepare, again, the inevitable spreadsheet of the photographs. Now, fortunately, Brian, who's here, who is very much involved with the running of the photographic department, they had registers, which fortunately they were saved, and the Gloucester Archives had the registers. So we had registers, which meant bringing out yet the old camera again and photographing the registers, which showed the photograph number, the description of the equipment, and the customer. Didn't have the order numbers and things like that, but with the work that had gone before, it was then a case of preparing yet another set of spreadsheets. And this is the master spreadsheet of the photograph numbers. And this is just the first page, but you can see at the bottom here, there are 71 pages. And there's something like 4,500 lines, individual lines of photographs, and that is just of the photographic department up until 1975.
And I guess not all the photographs you got were in perfect condition, and you had to do some restoration work.
A lot of restoration work, particularly with the early ones. So the photographs were then... after I produced the spreadsheet, which took some time, I have to say, but it was well worth doing because it enabled me to put categories. So where there were balers, then you could have one on balers, one on extrusion presses, and there are about 20 categories or so altogether, which on these type of spreadsheets, of course, you can filter each one, and so you can get all of one description, all of another description quite easily, and it's easy to do. But the important thing was to identify what there was, which box it was in, and if it was, there was an M on here, as you can see, which means it was missing. There wasn't a copy. Probably have the negative, but not a white copy.
No.
So then we had to get to move to the next stage of scanning. Oh, a laborious thing. Well, that's still going on, believe it or not. This is sort of 2 years down the line. Mm. Black and white photographs, essentially, of probably, we've got to about 90% now, I guess. The ones available have been scanned, and a lot of them are up on the website. There's something like 2,500 to 2,500.
See, this is what I think is fantastic. For people around Gloucestershire, well, and around the world, as Julia said when we started, to look at it, and on your list, you know, to look at a 725-ton plate bender, a 500-ton gun straightener, you know, all these hydraulic pumps, all these things, to actually be able to read this and then go to the photograph and see what it looked like, because it must be phenomenal.
Well, then, having scanned photographs, a lot of the photographs, of course, had the holes on them.
The punch holes.
It seemed sensible to eradicate the holes, some of which you could do by cropping the holes out of the picture. But since they're all digital, it's amazing. I didn't know anything about it, really, until I taught myself how to use Picture Manager and paint and things of that.
I was going to say, you must either be Photoshop or one of the other manipulating images.
There are lots of different processes that all end up doing the same thing. I say, it was laborious to begin with. I think I've speeded up a bit now. But auto-enhancing them, I mean, some of the early ones particularly, they look as though they've been taken yesterday. I mean, some are really, really good through auto-enhancement, which you wouldn't get by any other means. And I think it's laborious, but if it's worth doing, it's worth doing well.